This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Our hearts are broken. We have lost our children here in the classrooms of our schools where these children used to go. They are now empty chairs.
That was South African President Cyril Ramaphosa during the eulogy for 21 teens who died of a mysterious cause in a tavern. Details coming up also. Sudan's military leader has relieved five civilian members of the ruling Sovereign Council. These stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Families and friends of 21 teenagers who died mysteriously at the South African tavern about 2 weeks ago gathered today at a symbolic funeral service to pay their latest respects. 19 empty coffins were brought to the service after two of the dead were buried yesterday. President Cyril Ramaphosa came to console the families of the victims. The youngest was 13. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
It was one of South Africa's saddest times as the convoy of 19 hearses, each with an empty coffin, approached the Cinerad Park Sports Ground in East London in the Eastern Cape. Hundreds of grieving mourners filled a large tent there to capacity. Faces of children dressed in school uniforms were covered with grief, sadness, and tears as the 19 coffins were carried in one by one. Paramedics attended to a family member who became overwhelmed by grief. Ramaphosa delivered the eulogy.
Our hearts are broken. We have lost our children here in the classrooms of our schools where these children used to go. They are now empty chairs. In one night, 21 bright lives were snuffed out.
Families still don't know what killed their children. Dr. Matiwane, who has asked for an update on progress of forensic and toxicology tests, told mourners that the cause of death has not been established yet, though a stampede has been ruled out.
In conjunction with the police, we are committed to engage with the respective families as and when we are in receipt of the analytical laboratory results.
Angry mourners targeted the government amid accusations that police should have ensured that the underage children did not go to the Enyobeni Tavern. Police Minister Pekicele warned anyone who may have contributed directly or indirectly to the deaths.
We want this day to be a peace day, but that does not mean the war is not coming. Somebody somewhere must answer.
Burials that started yesterday are expected to continue till the weekend. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Today, Rwanda's President Paul Kagame and Democratic Republic of Congo's President Felix Tshisekedi are meeting in Angola to discuss differences between their countries. Angolan President João Lourenço is brokering the talks at the request of the African Union. A surge in attacks by the M23 militant group in the eastern DRC has raised tensions between the neighboring nations. The DRC accuses Rwanda of backing the group, one of the largest of the scores of militias fighting in the country's east. Kigali denies the allegation and accuses Kinshasa of backing an armed group that wants to seize power in Rwanda. Journalist Zanem Neti Zaidi is in Goma in the eastern DRC. He spoke with people there to get their thoughts on today's meeting.
J'ai la conviction qu'ils vont parler de la situation sécuritaire de notre pays.
This man says he is convinced that they will talk about the security situation in the country, especially the situation in the eastern part, in the Bunagana, where there is a war. He says Congolese expect a favorable result and they hope that the president will do everything in their favor. Others are less hopeful.
Personnellement, je ne m'attends à rien parce que dans le passé,
this man says he doesn't expect anything because in the past they have already seen meetings of the heads of state and it didn't produce any effect. He says the leaders have already met several times and the situation is still the same. This man also has low expectations. He says they do not expect anything, especially since the people are suffering under what he called the helpless gaze of the country's leaders. He says, in his opinion, the first thing to do is to ask the rebels to free the area they occupy. He says they should not start a dialogue with the rebels until they withdraw from the areas they occupy. Since March, the M23 rebels, a mainly ethnic Tutsi group that says it is protecting Tutsi communities, have seized control over several towns, including Bunagana, on the border with Uganda. In Nigeria, gunmen attacked the Kuji Medium Custodial Center late Tuesday night, freeing hundreds of prisoners. Security officials say they have recaptured many of them. We have more from Abuja.
The gunmen who bombed the Kuji Medium Custodial Center gained access to the prison yard from the back of the facility. Security forces in the city say they have retaken control of the prison. Some Nigerian news outlets report between 300 and 600 prisoners escaped. Security officials say many have been recaptured, and officials say they suspect the Islamist militant group Boko Haram carried out the attack. Sporadic gunshots panicked some area residents during the attack. Witnesses say the attack lasted for over an hour and the attackers came prepared. A resident of the area, Victorson Abwenson, spoke to VOA.
People were still awake and milling around. That's why some residents were shot alongside prison warders who were the actual target. You can see that the prison was bombed, and after they freed their members, that's the Boko Haram people who were being held there, they also told others to flee. And they instructed them that as they were fleeing, they should be shouting Allah Akbar.
He said residents are living in fear as the security situation of the country has worsened.
We are aware that the security situation in Abuja had already become porous, so this will heighten it, this will make it worse, and residents are panicking. Many people are afraid because more insecurity will be unleashed on the people, and the government seem to have become helpless and overwhelmed, unfortunately.
One prison employee is reported to have died in the attack. The public relations officer of the Nigeria Correctional Center, Abubakar Umar, said officers are investigating how the attack occurred.
Well, we may not be able to ascertain the remote cause of the attack, but our intelligence are on ground to mop up whatever happened last night. And I can assure you that once that is done, because it's part of the detail that I promise you,
Umar assured Kuji residents that the freed prisoners will be captured.
They should go about their normal business as the situation has been brought under control. While the fleeing inmates, we can assure that most of them will be recaptured because we have the correction now, which is the database of all our inmates in the Federation.
News reports say the Kuji facility houses former police commander Abba Kyari, who is awaiting trial on drug smuggling charges. Officials say Kyari is still in custody. The Kuji prison attack comes shortly after an attack on the security team of President Muhammadu Buhari on Tuesday in Katsina State, the president's home state. Two persons were injured. However, the president was not in the convoy when the gunmen opened fire. For VOA News from Abuja, Nigeria.
Mohamed Barkindo, the outgoing Secretary General of the Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries, has died abruptly at age 63. According to Reuters, the Nigerian oil industry veteran played a key role in the forming of the wider OPEC Plus group of oil producers that has helped the industry navigate global shocks. He was due to step down at the end of this month after 6 years in OPEC's top job as the world deals with dramatically higher fuel prices stemming from sanctions against Russia for its invasion of Ukraine. Hours before his death, Barkindo met Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari and gave a speech at an Abuja energy summit. Sudan's military leader, Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, relieved 5 civilian members of the ruling Sovereign Council because he plans to dissolve it. The move came after al-Burhan said Monday the military would step back from the government to allow the formation of a civilian-led rule. Al-Burhan did not give an explanation of his decision to fire the 5 officials. The civilian members of the Sudanese Sovereign Council were appointed in November, days after al-Burhan staged a military coup. Speaking to VOA's South Sudan in Focus program, one of the dismissed civilians, Abul Ghassim Muhammad Bartam, welcomed the move. He described it as a serious beginning for implementing the separation of power sharing between the military and civilians. Many opposition members, however, have rejected al-Burhan's announcement and call it a ploy to keep power in military hands. Some opposition groups say they plan to continue their pro-democracy protests. You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. Please note we have moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There, you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. Southern European states, including Italy and Spain, are urging NATO allies to address threats from North Africa. As Henry Ridgewell reports from the Spanish capital, while the war in Ukraine dominates NATO's agenda, Madrid wants the alliance to prepare for other potential flashpoints.
Hundreds of migrants attempted to breach the border fence from Morocco into the Spanish enclave of Melilla last month. At least 23 people died. The migrants, mostly from sub-Saharan Africa, are desperate to reach Europe. Many arrive by boat on the Spanish Canary Islands, and Spain fears the pressure on its borders could be about to get worse. Ukraine is one of the world's top suppliers of grain. The Russian invasion has cut exports by around two-thirds. The United Nations has warned that will exacerbate an already worsening hunger crisis in Africa. Europe is readying for a spike in migration. Chema Santana is a migration advisor to the government of the Canary Islands. He said, we have been looking at whether there is more movement of people linked to the increase in prices, to the difficulty of these countries in accessing grain and wheat. And what we have been told is that for the moment there is not, but it is a matter of time. Madrid warns that migration could be used as a pressure tactic by hostile actors. A resurgent Islamist militancy in parts of the Sahel is also driving migrant flows. Europe says Russian mercenaries from the Wagner Group are exacerbating the conflict. Spain's Foreign Minister José Manuel Álvarez.
It's very clear that the Wagner company is there and that there are foreign troops in several countries of the Sahel. And definitely it's not foreign troops what the Sahel needs. What the Sahel needs, it's development and stability.
Spain is seeking international help. In March, it struck a deal with Morocco to secure a clampdown on irregular migration. Critics accuse Madrid of outsourcing migration policy to a country with a history of human rights abuses. The Moroccan government denies those accusations. At last week's NATO summit in Madrid, Spain secured official recognition by the alliance of the threats emanating from North Africa.
Una de las mayores preocupaciones...
Spain's Prime Minister Pedro Sánchez said, "This is one of the greatest concerns for Europe and for our country. This is because of the instability and the crises that come from this. Irregular migratory movements, terrorism, food and energy crises, and the climate emergency." Meanwhile, NATO and EU forces held exercises in recent days just off the Spanish and North African coasts. Residents of the Spanish town of Tarifa had a front row view of the drills.
Porque es una zona muy inestable.
This man, who did not want to be named, said it is a very unstable area. It is a ticking time bomb. You know what the Maghreb is. Anything can come of it. A war, conflict. Spain insists it is not calling for any NATO intervention in North Africa, but instead recognition of what it calls hybrid threats. Many NATO members say the lesson from Ukraine is that the alliance needs to be better prepared for future crises. And here, in the south of Europe, allies warn that instability in North Africa could be the next big problem. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, Madrid.
Egypt's national dialogue, which was called by President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, began yesterday with a meeting of its 19-member board of trustees. It includes members of the two houses of parliament, academics, political scientists, civil society leaders, and journalists. Organizers say it will cover a wide range of issues concerning Egypt's political, economic, and social future. Said Sadiq, professor of political sociology at American University in Cairo, explained to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi what prompted Sisi to take that move at this time.
There are internal and external motives. Internally, if you remember, Sisi, when he was a defense minister in 2013, he practiced the same tactic, the call for national dialogue. So this is one of his well-tried tools. Internally, Egypt has a very soaring debt, almost $157 billion. The economic impact of corona and the uncontrolled effect of the Ukrainian war all are worsening the inflation situation in the country. And that may cause in the future unrest. Egyptian media, you know, have been paving the road for the upcoming economic hardship, blaming it on external development and in a shy, belated way to the economic policies chosen by the regime that give priority to infrastructure, the new capital, rather than factories for exports. So an economic earthquake is hitting the country, and the regime needed a dialogue to help in reducing the blame on the regime economic mistake. This is for the internal reason. Externally, you need to take into consideration that the regime has many issues. One, they want to improve their image abroad. Negotiations with the IMF are underway, and other international and regional organizations like the EU for more loans, assistance. President Biden, important regional summit in Jeddah in mid-July with many leaders. The upcoming climate change summit in Sharm el-Sheikh in November, and also the opening of the new museum. Sisi wants many international leaders to attend, and so it is very important that they open a dialogue. The dialogue is limited to those who supported the 30s of June 2013. So it's not open to anybody. It's only people who supported the 2013, which means Islamists are out, and the dialogue has just started. And before it started, the opposition knew from the beginning that there is imbalance of power, and so they made maximalist demands with the hope that they will get something out of this dialogue.
But if the dialogue's proceedings are freely conducted and its recommendations are embraced by the government, would that be a milestone in the role of President Sisi as well as a reflection of his government's confidence?
Both the government and the weak opposition are in a crisis. They feel the need to accept this dialogue to lessen the pressure on them. The regime responds to internal economic problems and improve its image abroad for several reasons that we have discussed, including the Biden visit summit. The opposition also could not afford rejecting being engaged in the dialogue. Dialogue is a basic principle in politics. National dialogue is a tool of politics. They are politicians and they wanted to be in the picture. No one rejected the dialogue. In fact, there was a general approval and support of this dialogue. The call for the dialogue prompted the weak opposition to be active and unify the ranks after a long period of silence. They wanted to seize the moment to pressure the regime to extract more concessions, or some of those concessions, like releasing some political prisoners, more freedom of expression and media, movement of opposition inside the country. The expected results will be a compromise, limited concessions so that everyone would return happy, no complete victory or defeat to anyone, just a middle ground point.
That was Saeed Sadiq, professor of political sociology at the American University in Cairo, speaking with VOA's Mohammed Al-Shenawi. The UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, in Somalia says at least 500 children have died this year of malnutrition as the country deals with record-breaking drought. UNICEF Somalia says the death toll is just the tip of the iceberg as many deaths go unreported. Mohamed Desani reports from Mogadishu, Somalia.
UNICEF Somalia spokesman Victor Jinyama told VOA the drought is having its worst effects on children, with 400,000 at risk of severe acute malnourishment if not reached immediately with emergency support. He says those children will be in danger of dying.
And so far, we have recorded about 500 deaths of children that have been admitted for severe acute malnutrition. And this is only a tip of the iceberg, because we know that there are many more children whose deaths are never recorded. These children are dying in their homes. They are dying on the way as they travel in search of help. Help is desperately needed at this point.
Jinyama says they have appealed for 112 million in emergency funds for this year, but have only received about half. The worst drought in Horn of Africa in four decades is set to get worse as the region faces a fifth straight failed rainy season. Officials in the town of Dolo on Somalia border with Ethiopia says they still host about 10,000 people displaced from the last major drought in 2011. In a visit Sunday to an IDB camp in Dolo, Maya Mohamed Hussein Abdi told VOA they have about 3,000 displaced people from the current drought. He says Somalis are arriving every day in search of food, water, and shelter.
Dolo is a hub of UN agencies and international organizations. Dolo is a borderland area. And that resulted, you know, large number of internally displaced persons come here to seek help from UN agencies and the government.
Somalia's new president, Hassan Sheikh Mohamud, who was elected in May, that the same month appointed a special envoy for the drought response. Abdirahman Abdishakur Warsame's job is to scale up aid to Somalis most in need. Warsame visited Dolo in June and told VOA they were doing everything they can to avert famine.
That's why we are calling international community and international donors to pay attention to Somali drought and increase the level of humanitarian assistance. Also, my government will do as much as possible to facilitate and to contribute the assistance of the aid and support to the people who are affected by the drought.
The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, UN OCHA, says since January, they have provided life-saving assistance to nearly 4 million Somalis. The UN and partners in late June launched an appeal for nearly $1 billion for a drought response and famine prevention plan in Somalia, targeting 6.4 million. Mohamed Dyson for VOA News, Mogadishu, Somalia.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, and our engineer, Nashwan Kali, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.